Hello and welcome to the June 2018 InfoTech Threat Landscape Briefing. My name is Jessica Ireland and I am a director in our Security and Threat Intelligence practice. I will be facilitating today's briefing. During today's discussion, we will cover topics related to cybersecurity, threat actor campaigns, regulatory compliance and legal issues, and threat actor exploits and tactics. Our cybersecurity section covers high-level topics such as threat trends, data breaches, control strategies, and exposure to vulnerabilities that act to broaden your understanding of the cybersecurity impact on your business. Our threat actor campaign section covers topics related to nation states, cyber criminals, and hacktivists orchestrating campaigns designed to compromise networks and exfiltrate sensitive data. Our regulatory compliance and legal section covers trends in the global regulatory and legal landscape with the potential to impact compliance adherences or disrupt business operations. And lastly, our exploitation and tactics section provides information related to the tools, tactics, and exploits threat actors are leveraging in their attack campaigns. Today's briefing will be supported by Research Manager Daniel Black, Senior Research Manager Philippe D'Souza, Consulting Analysts Michelle Tran and Logan Rohde, and Senior Consulting Analyst Ian Mulholland. During today's briefing, we will cover topics related to Iran likely launching new cyber attacks, blockchain equaling the future of antivirus, the Chili's breach, PGP vulnerability, and other topics. Let's begin.
In this section, I will be speaking to you about the likely increase in state-sponsored cyber attacks from Iran. On May 8, 2018, President Donald Trump pulled the United States out of the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the controversial non-proliferation accord signed in July 2015. Known informally as the Iranian nuclear deal, the agreement provided sanctions relief and access to global technology, energy, and finance markets in exchange for restrictions on Iran's nuclear program. While the deal's hallmark achievement has been limiting Iran's breakout time to a nuclear weapon, it has also had a beneficial secondary impact in moderating Iran's use of offensive cyber operations against Western targets. With the United States deciding to reimpose sanctions, the expectation is that Iran is to renew its cyber operations against Western interests, putting to use its refined cyber capabilities that have been road-tested in recent years in regional conflicts. Before diving into what we can expect as a response to the nuclear deal withdrawal, it is first important to understand why and how Iran uses its offensive cyber tools. Iran's strategy for using cyber attacks follows its general foreign policy approach of using tit-for-tat exchanges to impose retaliatory costs on its political adversaries. Consistent with Tehran's use of proxy groups in regional conflicts, it also leverages a wide array of proxy groups within Iran and from regional allies, such as the Syrian Electronic Army, Yemen Cyber Army, and the Islamic Cyber Resistance for Hezbollah, to build extra capacity and provide the regime with plausible deniability for any attacks it directs while still exacting its desired costs. This means that cyber activity emanating from Iran or its regional proxies may theoretically be conducted without explicit consent or knowledge from Tehran, but each actor receives some level of direction or guidance from Iran's security and defense priorities through the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps or the Iranian Ministry of Intelligence. This has direct implications for the types of attacks we can expect in response to the United States' withdrawal from the nuclear deal. Iran's cutouts and proxy groups operate with varying levels of organizational capability and do not possess the sophistication that we can expect from other top-tier nation-state threat actors that are directly tied to their government entities. Iran's indirect approach to orchestration leaves many of these organizations to their own vices, with limited resources and less advanced skill sets. Their success is often the result of security failures or poor infrastructure protection on the part of their victims, searching for opportunistic targets with existing vulnerabilities, and using open-source toolkits or reusing minimally altered malware from past operations. These limitations typically guide Iranian targeting towards commercial targets with less defensive resources, as generally, government agencies in Canada, the United States, and Europe are hardened beyond the capabilities of Iran's threat actors to penetrate them. So, what is the outlook for the post-nuclear deal era? Within the first 24 hours of U.S. withdrawal from the nuclear deal, researchers at CrowdStrike have already documented a notable shift in Iran's cyber activities. It is likely a matter of when, not if, it will attempt to exact costs on Western entities. With the information we know of Iran's typical approach of using its cyber capabilities, we can model who Iran will likely target and how they will attempt to breach their security protocols. Based on Iran's tit-for-tat thinking, it is likely that banks and financial services, as well as oil and energy sector companies, will bear the brunt of Iran's aggression, due to their relevance to lost sanctions relief and importance in enforcing renewed U.S. sanctions packages. Lessons can be learned from the last major Iranian attack on American financial institutions, Operation Ababil in 2012, where an Iranian proxy breached thousands of websites using vulnerable software to conduct DDoS attacks targeting U.S. financial institutions. The attack, at the time the largest DDoS attack in recorded history, resulted in massive software failures and hundreds of millions of dollars in damage. Iran will likely look to replicate this playbook, looking for means of opportunistic targeting of existing vulnerabilities. Iran is also likely to target a wide array of critical infrastructure, following the path of least resistance to identify vulnerable systems that can be used as leverage in case of an escalation of hostilities between the United States and Iran. Security researchers are warning that Iranian hackers have already shifted focus away from regional adversaries, probing Western critical infrastructure in multiple industries for future attack. This is generally a trend that is becoming commonplace with state-sponsored cyber actors. Whenever there's an increased tension between states, we can expect to see a rise in industrial control system targeting. Based on past alleged Iranian cyber attacks against Western institutions, it is expected that spear phishing campaigns, password spray campaigns against targeted accounts, and data deletion malwares would be the most likely TTPs to be used by Iran in coming months. So what does this mean for your organization? While the volume of attacks from Iran is likely going to increase, the good news is that basic security best practices are going to be highly effective in protecting against the capabilities that Iranian threat actors possess. Some basic steps to take include, first, conducting a vulnerability scan of your organization to identify any known vulnerabilities or missing patches that the organization needs to action. Second is staying current on patch management. This is the lowest cost way to ensure you're not exposed to existing vulnerabilities. Iranian threat actors often exploit recently patched vulnerabilities looking to catch organizations before they can deploy their updates. Don't let them beat you to the punch. Third is changing your existing administrative passwords. It is possible that passwords may have already been compromised and available on the dark web. Changing them now gives you another layer of protection. Fourth is reviewing help desk password management practices around initial passwords, password resets for user lockouts, and shared accounts. These are often points of misalignment with company policy, creating an exploitable security gap for threat actors. Fifth is monitoring for signs of password spray campaigns. Common indicators are massive spike in login attempts against the enterprise single sign-on portal or email application, or employee logins from IP addresses inconsistent with their normal locations. Vigilant monitoring is core to preventing these slow and low type of attacks. Sixth is providing updated security awareness training. Train your staff on how to spot phishing attempts and other social engineering exploits on an ongoing basis. Social engineering tricks are consistently evolving, and training needs to be kept fresh to keep pace with newer techniques. Finally, for more information about how to build security best practices that will fend off opportunistic and persistent attacks like the ones expected from Iran, please visit InfoTech's Design and Implement a Vulnerability Management Program and Humanize a Security Awareness and Training Program Blueprints.
Cybersecurity threats are becoming more complex all the time, and the costs of dealing with them are already astronomically high and are expected to reach $6 trillion per year by 2021. Organizations everywhere are waking up to the fact that, in this day and age, they need to treat cybersecurity seriously. Antivirus software is an obvious and fairly cost-effective means of protection. However, there are several reasons why current antivirus solutions are lagging behind the rapidly evolving cybersecurity landscape. One of the major drawbacks to current antivirus solutions is that end users are more or less stuck with single-vendor offerings. That is, different brands of antivirus software tend not to work well with each other because one brand will usually perceive competing software as a threat, limiting the usefulness of even having an antivirus program in the first place. As a result, all antivirus software is essentially the same. This is because it has to be. Users aren't interested in buying software that doesn't cover all the kinds of threats they know they're up against. This makes logical sense, but it consequently leads to a lack of specialization in antivirus software. The problem here is that cyber threats are becoming highly specialized, and there is a growing need for targeted responses in addition to broad spectrum coverage. The rapid evolution of cybersecurity threats means that the cybersecurity industry is growing quickly, and new jobs are being created regularly, but not filled at the same rate. Current estimates figure the number of unfilled cybersecurity jobs at present is nearly 2 million. But this issue has less to do with a shortage of qualified applicants and more to do with the centralized structure of contemporary antivirus software companies. As Steve Bassi, CEO and founder of PolySwarm Antivirus, notes, there are many cybersecurity experts floating around the third world with lack of access to jobs. Major antivirus companies tend to hire first world support. This leaves uncounted InfoSec professionals to deploy their skills elsewhere in IT or even maliciously. However, he argues that because a blockchain-based model would allow for decentralization of the antivirus industry, it would go a long way towards helping to fill vacant jobs. But decentralization is just one of the benefits of moving towards blockchain-based antivirus technology. Other major benefits include the collaborative perfection that is lacking but very much needed in today's marketplace, as well as combining the benefits of antivirus protection with a bug bounty model. A bug bounty is a reward that some companies are willing to pay users who discover and disclose security issues they find in the company's software. A blockchain-based antivirus would allow for multiple security experts to sniff out potential vulnerabilities in users' systems and create a patch to fix the problem. And each expert would be paid based on the quality and accuracy of their assessments, similar to a bug bounty. We'll come back to these exciting possibilities in a moment, but first, it's a good idea to review the basics of blockchain technology in order to understand how it can be used to improve antivirus software. If blockchain is, for you, still just a buzzword associated with cryptocurrencies that you only have a vague understanding of, you're not alone. Blockchain is a complex technology, but fortunately, the basics are fairly simple to grasp and are all you need to know to understand how blockchain has the potential to revolutionize the antivirus industry. First and foremost, blockchain is simply a method of tracking shared data, but it is getting a lot of attention because of how securely it allows for data to be transferred without being supervised by a middleman of some kind, which is why it is the backbone of the cryptocurrency economy. The reason blockchain is so secure is that it works like an old-fashioned ledger book. That is, when data needs to be updated or changed, it is not edited in its original entry. Rather, an entirely new entry is created each time there is an update of any kind. Each new entry is known as a block, and because new blocks are added as a way of tracking changes to the data, it forms a chain, hence the name blockchain. And just like a chain, each section is linked to the one that came before it, with the exception of the very first, of course. In the interest of size and security, however, each block is stored in the chain in hashed form, i.e., a unique representation of the data in an encrypted form that allows for it to be stored as a fixed-size data piece. Hashing allows for all data, regardless of length, to be represented in the same sized format. Moreover, these hashes add an additional layer of security because each new block that is produced contains a tag of the previous block's hash. The hash essentially acts as a kind of signature that confirms that the blockchain has not been tampered with. If someone does attempt to tamper with a block, the block produces a new hash. But computers on the network will be tracking the hash series and will be able to determine if a given block is not legitimate and prevent it from being accepted into the blockchain. In order to prevent an attacker from editing all the necessary blocks in the chain as a way of covering their tracks, blockchain requires a kind of verification step known as proof of work. The step requires a computer to perform certain calculations in order to add material to the blockchain. The step isn't exhaustive when the computer only has to do it once, taking about 10 minutes to complete. But to complete this step enough times to cover up any tampering would be much more difficult. As a final security step, changes to the blockchain are approved on a consensus basis, meaning that an attacker would have to fool more than 50% of all the computers in the network associated with a given blockchain, and new data is only added when there is a consensus that the new data is legitimate and not the work of an attacker, which is why the hashes are so important. Lastly, blockchain is capable of using smart contracts, which are essentially a set of criteria programmed into the blockchain, and once these criteria are met, a particular action occurs, such as sending money to another user of the blockchain after having completed requested work. So how does all of this relate to antivirus, you ask? Good question. Because blockchain can be easily used by anyone on a given network, it provides a platform for antivirus technology to evolve into a collaborative, service-based software that anyone can plug into, regardless of where they live, so long as they have an internet connection, thus solving some of the key problems in the antivirus marketplace today. Blockchain offers a system in which malware threats and solutions to fix them can be stored in an easy-to-update format that allows for multiple contributors to work together without perceiving each other as threats. This innovation would effectively allow for a version of combined protection that is not possible with current antivirus solutions. It would also allow for anti-malware experts to specialize in particular areas, with these various specializations being brought together under a single vendor who becomes more like a supplier of specialized antivirus solutions. Moreover, blockchain's consensus requirement to add new data means that outlying or less accepted ideas are not freely added to the blockchain. Rather, adding such data is controlled by the blockchain's proof-of-work feature. In the antivirus world, proof-of-work differs a bit from that seen in cryptocurrency, in that it is not based on a computational process, but rather on the calculated accuracy of the person attempting to add a block to the chain. However, the underlying principle in both cases is more or less the same. Both have a hoop to jump through before new data can be added, which ensures that inaccurate or fake data is not freely uploaded on a whim. And finally, smart contracts are used as a last step to ensure that all parties participating in the blockchain are playing by the rules, as payment for services is only given when the contract has been satisfied, ensuring that only high-quality contributions are added to the blockchain, and that the end users are only paying for solutions that actually resolve their problem. Of course, each company that rolls out this technology will tweak it in the ways they see as most beneficial, but nearly all will use some version of these key blockchain elements. However, be sure to monitor blockchain antivirus closely. Blockchain is becoming an increasingly lucrative technology, but it's hard to tell exactly where it's going. As Christopher Barth notes, there are some legal concerns over how exactly contracts based on blockchain will work, given that the contract is computer code and not an actual document, making it difficult to present to a court. Nevertheless, blockchain is likely to influence many industries in the coming years and will be worth paying attention to. If you're interested in blockchain and are curious about the ways it might help you in the near future, be sure to check out InfoTech's resources via the links provided.
On May 11, 2018, Chili's restaurants experienced a data breach on consumer payment card information. Believed to be obtained by malware, the breach was believed to be limited to purchases done at Chili's restaurants between March and April of this year, with only some locations affected. The data breach involved obtaining credit card and debit card numbers, cardholder names, expiration dates, and CCV codes. At the present time, Brinker International, the company that owns Chili's restaurant chains, has contacted third-party forensics and law authorities to determine the nature, scope, and parties responsible for the data incident. In addition to running an investigation, Chili's has provided customers impacted by the data breach with free fraud resolution and 12 months of complimentary credit monitoring services with ID experts. This includes $1 million insurance reimbursement policy and educational materials. For more information, please visit the hyperlink below. While not all details have been released, some recommendations can be made about your approach to data breaches. For one, having an incident response plan is key. These days, data breaches are inevitable for businesses, therefore having a set of protocols to handle the compromise can help mitigate damage and increase your success of recovery. Here, Chili's immediately activated their incident response plan upon learning of the breach, preventing further reputational and financial damages. Another recommendation is to communicate pertinent details of the breach to appropriate personnel. This can include legal, public relations, human resources, and other relevant stakeholder groups. This collaboration will help strategize the best course of action to control the message to your stakeholders so that misinformation is not conveyed. Lastly, we recommend that businesses make security awareness and training routine in their employees' calendar year. We recommend a micro-learning approach whereby training exercises are delivered in small chunks of time, however, more frequently throughout the year. In addition, posters, emails, practice scenarios, and lecture-based training can be incorporated into this framework.
As of May 25th, 2018, the GDPR regulation is in effect. The repercussions of this regulation are already being felt around the globe, from a barrage of privacy emails in our inboxes to lawsuits against global giants. Some organizations have responded to this regulation by restricting access to EU citizens. For example, according to the BBC, Tronc, an American newspaper company, has revoked the ability for European users to access its website. This includes news outlets like the Chicago Tribune and the Los Angeles Times. According to The Verge, Instapaper, an application for saving and reading articles owned by Pinterest, has temporarily stopped working for European users. Lawsuits have already begun against large global giants. According to the Irish Times, Max Schrems, an Austrian privacy campaigner, has filed a lawsuit against both Facebook for £3.9 billion and Google for £3.7 billion, totaling about $8.8 billion USD, for coercing users into accepting data policies, enforcing an all-or-nothing choice for users, which violates the GDPR's provisions around particularized consent.
On May 13, 2018, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, or EFF, on behalf of a group of European researchers, warned the public that vulnerabilities had been discovered in two widely used email encryption methods, OpenPGP and S/MIME, and advised all users to stop using such software. OpenPGP and S/MIME are both commonly used to encrypt corporate email communications, raising concerns of emails being read through this attack type. The attack begins with a hacker gaining access to the network. Once inside, the attacker uses a man-in-the-middle attack to intercept an email in transit, or uses another technique to gain access to stored emails. The attacker is then able to see the ciphertext of the message. Although the message cannot be read in this form, since it's still ciphertext, it can be altered to include lines of HTML code, such as an image tag, that many email clients will automatically activate. This HTML modification is the key to decrypting the message. After the HTML modification, the email is then sent to its intended recipients, whose decryption keys automatically display the deciphered message. To them, the email exchange seems to be business as usual, but the malicious code has secretly sent a copy of the plain text message to the attacker. The first thing to note here is that the eFail vulnerability is not really a fault with OpenPGP or S/MIME, but rather poorly implemented MIME parsers and MUAs that link together decrypted HTML MIME components, making it easy to implant malicious tags into messages and successfully steal and decrypt sensitive messages. The real problem is that many email clients are configured in a way that automates the decryption process that the HTML script exploits, in turn sending the attacker the deciphered message. It should be understood then that the issue is ultimately a problem stemming from email clients' implementation of the OpenPGP specification. However, OpenPGP does include a feature to prevent this action from occurring, but it is up to the end user to activate it. Unfortunately, the S/MIME vulnerability is not so easily corrected. HTML has been known for some time to be a means to launch a back-channel attack. This means the quote-unquote vulnerability here is not new information necessarily, as a real issue lies in how the email client is set up. Despite the alarmist nature of the original announcement, InfoTech does not recommend uninstalling OpenPGP. This just creates a similar problem, but in a different form, namely sensitive emails with no encryption. Instead, focus on the suggestions shown on the screen here. Stop or limit the use of HTML in emails. For most organizations, a simple text-based email format is all that is needed for two more people to communicate important information to each other. If HTML emails are necessary, be sure to also use a MIME parser to block access to external links, i.e. the kind an eFail attack depends on. A MIME parser is a program that lays out a series of commands for how to deal with information connected in an email, for example, whether or not to display HTML image tags, and can be used to help secure any necessary HTML use. Another recommendation is to start using authenticated encryption. Authenticated encryption, known as modification detection code in OpenPGP, was developed precisely to mitigate the style of attack eFail hinges on, and has been available in OpenPGP since 2001. An eFail attack requires the hacker to tamper with an email's message encryption, and the attack's success depends on the email client displaying the message despite it having been tampered with. Some clients do check for tampering, but many will display the message regardless of whether such problems are detected. However, by using authenticated encryption, this risk can be successfully mitigated because it stops the email client's automatic response. Lastly, we recommend switching from S/MIME to OpenPGP. Unfortunately, S/MIME does not currently have an authenticated encryption option available, and thus it remains vulnerable to eFail attacks. However, this risk can be managed by switching to OpenPGP and using the modification detection code feature to ensure that you can still send encrypted messages with this time-tested software.
This concludes our monthly threat briefing. If you have any questions or need any support, please do not hesitate to contact us to set up an analyst call. Thank you.